JRE Review fans, head to the website at jrereview.com. Check out the new blog posts, bios, etc. Also, we got Patreon over there, so get some exclusive content, and we really appreciate your support. So go ahead and sign up for like as little as $3. We'd love that.
You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one of all time.
One, go.
Enjoy the show.
So Obama, who was obviously a very, very smart guy and, you know, incredibly talented politician, at least in while he was running for president, he was. I think he's lost a step. But so Obama still was a bit of a narcissist, and he wanted to pick Joe Biden as his VP. He didn't want someone who was going to outshine him. And so he picked Joe Biden, who, you know, if you even before he went senile, was never particularly bright. So he picked Joe Biden as his VP. And then Joe Biden, well, he wanted some diversity points. And he also wanted someone to not outshine him, because now he was becoming senile and he was never that bright to begin with. So he picks Kamala Harris to be his VP. And then Kamala Harris needs to pick someone who won't outshine her. You know what I mean? So it's like the idiocracy just like spun out of control real quick, where all of a sudden you get to like the third VP in a row and you're like, yo, really? This is who you picked?
Like, he's a knuckle.
Dave Smith coming on strong. Wow. Making some points about that Democratic downhill roll. Crikey. He kicked things off strong. Strong critique about the ideological shift on the left, let's say, especially how his stance on their stance on like war and intervention has changed over the years. I mean, you know, if he's right about that kind of cascade of choices, and it's, you know, somewhat seems logical, very quickly you get to a point where you don't have strong candidates. Like, let's say that much. And that Waltz guy was, I don't know if he really was on anybody's radar.
Yeah, it was extremely underwhelming.
Yeah.
As a candidate, maybe as a human, it's hard to say.
He would be underwhelming if that was my neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that guy, like, he keeps asking me a lot of questions.
That would
like,
be the
I
guy.
Kind of, it's like the neighbor you don't really want to go outside for when you see him out there, because he's like gonna try and invite you over or something, want to hang out, and you're just like, I'm just busy.
Yeah, you wouldn't remember his name.
No,
I mean, you're no good with names to begin with.
But I'm surprised I did remember his name even for this. It'll be gone soon. Yeah,
I think that the way that Dave was just framing this, it was like he's echoing what a lot of people are feeling in the country, which is this like feeling of that like they're in mourning over what the party used to be. And like, I think hopeful that it can find its way back to representing what the Democratic people who've always voted democratically believe in and what they want. But that they're going to like take, you know of some real issues, you know,
they're gonna have to,
yeah,
you know, but the parties do, you know, they come back around, they learn their lessons, they realize, I mean, it's an interesting thing how these parties run. Often you can see it kind of top down rather than bottom up, meaning that it's the party that like is explaining to the people that believe in it, these are the morals and values and everything that we live by. And then the people cheer, yeah, we like that, we follow you, we vote for you. But it's also the other way around. It's that they sit around waiting for the people that's going to vote for him to be like, all right, what are you into? What is this? Gay stuff? Okay, gay marriage. Yep. And wait, portion. Okay, we're on that. Check that box. Well, the other side's like guns. You want bazookas? We're into it. We give you bazookas. You know, so that everyone's kind of molding themselves all the time to be relevant and to exist. And what the Democrats found out is if they keep going down this path and prioritizing the things that they have been, they will eventually become too obscure to even, you know, hold competition against the other party.
Yeah.
So they will adjust, you know?
Yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, I think when you look at the election results, it's quite shocking how red the image is.
So red. It's just like a few cities are blue, which really is striking because, you know, when the number is like 63 million to 65 million in the voting, you're like, oh, that's 50-50 spread yeah. out. Well, it technically is vote wise, but it's like, hold on a minute. Like, it just seems that we have two different types of people, and I'm not talking just ideology and parties. It's like people that live in cities have a completely different requirement for what they need their government to be than people that live everywhere else. Right. And there's more everywhere else. There's right. a lot more everywhere else than the cities. So in a way, it should just be that the cities are just governed differently. It's always going to be an odd mix-up otherwise. You've got people in cities somehow telling the rest of the country how to live and or kind of vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something there. I think.
I don't know how you would do that. Right. But like, I'm just throwing it out there. It's like there seems to be very distinct groups.
Somebody smarter than us figure that out.
Elon.
But I think, yeah. Right. Thanks, Elon. I think that what I was getting at was that the left, basically, their issues were so polarized and so like small, like the social issues they were focused on in their campaign. One, they were kind of all over the place, didn't really have any like good, strong policies in the campaign. And then the ones that they were really like loud about.
It was really all their standard stuff. You know, it was like, we care for the minorities and we'll, you know, they kind of kept a little quiet on the transgender stuff because they knew that, you know, that was kind of like losing some voting steam. You know, it was difficult for them to discuss the border because that had been a mess for 4 years and she was kind of in charge of that. So there was a lot of skirting around that. And then it was just back to, we've just got to stay away from this fascism and this dictatorship. And we got to think about our rights and keeping freedom. And it was just points that didn't really stand well. And she could never answer why she wasn't able to make anything really good happen over the last 4 years. And yeah. That's rough for her. I mean, she probably wouldn't have needed too many points of success to be able to kind of flip that switch, I think. You know, you got to have something to stand behind. It seemed like she had almost nothing.
Yeah, she was a puppet. She was just kind of there. She was just a face.
People, so many people online with describing this campaign as a perfect campaign. She ran the perfect campaign, and they're speaking like the shock is overwhelming them so much. And I almost feel like this is like when you watch those fake martial arts websites and like Instagrams where like the Tai Chi guy is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna fight an MMA guy. And I've done Tai Chi for 40 years, so I'll just be able to, you know, Wing Chun him into the next universe. And the guy gets flatlined instantly and is still in shock and disbelief. Yeah. Like, the delusion is high.
So what do they define as a perfect campaign? How do they define a perfect campaign? Is it a campaign that, loses? Because
no, I think
what happened.
I think what they're saying is, you know, they're just listening to everything they like. This podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Got an appetite for excitement? Fill up on Sauce Boss Barbecue, the newest exclusive slot game from DraftKings Casino. Play for mouth-watering wins and check out one-of-a-kind features like the Collection Multiplier and Progress Savings. New players play just $5 to score 50 instantly in casino credits. Download the app and sign up with code JRER. Then get a taste of Sauce Boss Barbecue exclusively on DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. One offer per new casino customer. Casino credits are not withdrawable and expire in 168 hours. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see casino.draftkings.com/get50. Ends November 24th, 2024. Game availability varies by jurisdiction. They're like, she said everything that you would want to believe in. And I just, it was just a campaign of positivity, and everyone was happy, and there was no hate, and we were all hopeful. It was like, just like this type of thing. And don't get me wrong, I love all that stuff, like hope and happiness and all of that is great, but there isn't really like a substantive argument that I could decipher from it. It was just a lot of echo chamber stuff, hope, and ultimately, you know, people that were, you know, this is the problem with those echo chambers, is they didn't realize what the kind of support that Trump was gaining. So they just assumed that, oh, well, Biden beat him in a landslide. So lots of people still hate Trump. So we'll just win again because we're the right side and we're the moral side. And when you stop listening to, you know, the competition, to the other party and all the people that are going to vote for him, you don't even know. Not to say that this is your enemy and you got to know your enemy, but you got to know, you got to know the playing field. You've got to know how people are leaning. And it just seemed like they lost track of that.
Yeah.
You know, in a big way. The big thing that stood out for me is the amount of people that I know voted the other way and were always Democrats my whole life knowing them. And if you had asked me a year ago if these people would ever vote Republican, I would say, and especially for Trump, I would say no chance.
Right.
Like not in a million years. Yet they did it.
What do you think?
There were multiples. They were just, they had no faith in Kamala figuring it out, and they were already tired of Biden. And it was a lot of what Dave was saying at the beginning. It's like Obama was a strong candidate. It's hard to argue against that. He was strong at what he did. He gained massive support. He got people behind him. He spoke in a way that everyone was like, whoa. I mean, he crushed John McCain.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it destroyed him.
Yeah.
So then if what Dave's saying is true, picked a slightly weaker VP, which, come on, we know Biden was. And then by the time he got into power, he was basically fried. I mean, he was barely working and went with a VP that was just to get some minority sympathy votes, honestly. Nobody liked her in the primaries.
Yeah.
So then they're running her, and it really is just like the, I almost feel like, I hate to give this analogy, but it's like the third inbred cousin along the entire family tree. It's like whoever you've got left to marry off to the next village.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, I guess we send Susie with a lazy eye over there.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that another kind of thread throughout this whole election season was that I noticed was like the level of sensitivity on the left. Like, there was almost no room to listen to real issues. Everything was like, you're attacking me and the people that I love because you're anti whatever. If you vote for Trump, you know, if you vote for Trump or if you don't vote for Kamala, you know,
what about the Tony Hinchcliffe joke?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, exactly. It's Tony Hinchcliffe from Kill Tony. I have met Tony. I have spoken to Tony multiple times at the Comedy Store. This dude, he is not a racist. The whole band that he has is black. I mean, I just don't see it. He's just not that type of guy. Now, does he say some fucked up jokes? Of course. It's what he does. He does roasts. He does jokes. He thought that one would land. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he doesn't really give a shit. He just moved on. But the fact that the news, Obama, like you name it, everyone discussed that joke as like a way to kind of tie it to the Republicans and say, oh, this is who the Republicans are.
Right.
They're people that would hate all minority groups and they're racist and this is part of their fascism. People just aren't, they're not falling for it. I mean, it was Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yeah.
That said this. He's not a fucking fascist. Right?
I don't know. I feel like that might be like one flaw in celebrities endorsing political candidates is, yes, they have sway. Yes, they have influence. But think about what's happening in like the world of Diddy. Like, you know, a lot of people that, you know, have associated themselves with P. Diddy in the past are endorsing the left, you know.
Oh, yeah. J-Lo came out to literally have a good cry.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if we are not following her judgment on all things, I don't know who we're following.
But yeah, when someone comes out and they endorse a candidate, but then something comes, you know, whatever, they do something that someone doesn't agree with, it's like, oh, the entire party, this represents the entire party, which is just absolutely not true.
Mm-mm.
I think people are extremely sensitive, especially during election times, about social issues that are important to them. And I say, get over it, you know, move on. Like, your family doesn't hate you. People still love you, even though they may vote differently than you. They probably just have a different priority list. You know, things are more, some things are more important to them than others. And that doesn't make them a bad person. Doesn't make them evil, doesn't make them a Nazi. It just makes them different. And I think we can all learn from each other to some extent, but also let's just like put your guard down a little bit, you know, don't be so wound up.
Yeah, they will be. People will be. This is tribal stuff and they're sold on it. It's almost like a religion with, you know, a lot of political people. Just, yeah, it's like their church, but every day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but look, Trump is in now. And one thing Dave was saying is like, okay, how is he going to move forward? Right. What are the things he's going to do? Who's he going to pick? Mm-hmm. I just saw a thing on Rubio. They just picked him and he made some like massive statements about wiping out Hamas. And mm-hmm. like, he's not looking for a ceasefire energy. Dave doesn't like that shit. So it's going to be interesting to see who he surrounds himself with. Does his relationship with Elon stay strong? That mm-hmm. seems like an important one. And Trump can be volatile. You know, when he gets upset, he's upset.
Mm-hmm.
He cuts people out. And it's like, is doing that to Elon worth it? On top of that, is there a great opportunity to pardon some people too?
Yeah.
I mean, Dave brought up the Ross Ulbricht case with Silk Road, the Silk Road founder. If you guys haven't seen the little movie on that, definitely check it out. It's wild and really fascinating. And, you know, also Edward Snowden. I think it would be incredible if Trump just went, we're pardoning Edward Snowden. And he can come back to America. I mean, the guy is a patriot, even though he's labeled a, you know, a terrorist, basically. domestic terrorist, I guess. I mean, I think he's a patriot. He pointed out that the NSA was just spying on everybody and released that information and did it, you know, like in a pretty ethical way. He went to the right news group that he trusted. He wanted it released carefully. And now he lives in Russia and he can't come back to America.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, people need to call out the government sometimes because they're up to some shit.
Yeah. I think, you know, in the Ulbricht case, obviously, I'll have to watch that movie and learn a little bit more. But, you know, they talked a lot about people that they find like their intelligence as a threat. Like doing something like that, creating this website isn't necessarily like against the law, right? There's no law that says you can't create this website, create this platform for people to do something. But essentially, as it's happening, they're creating legislation around it and making it illegal. Like, that's different than just, like, catching a criminal. You're, like, creating a reason. Same thing with poor little Peanut, you know? It's like, Peanut was not a criminal. Neither was his owner, necessarily.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there eventually was some pretty sketchy shit happening on Silk Road. And it was kind of set up in a way to be at a skirt. You know, taxes, regulations, you name it. I mean, it needed some oversight for sure. But I also get what you mean. It's like he shouldn't be in jail forever with no chance of parole for making a website.
Right.
That, you know, really wasn't intended to harm anybody.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm curious how many like other similar cases people just were fined.
People get arrested all the time for making child pornography websites and they don't go to jail forever.
Yeah.
And I would way rather they did.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, of course. And I think a lot of people would say, oh yeah, of course. Good people, forgiving people, empathetic people would say that. And still, for some reason our justice system is like, ah yeah, his 2 years and you're on a list.
Yeah. Well, I think something to note is, you know, Trump has nothing to lose this term. You know, he doesn't have to worry about reelection. Mm-hmm. Maybe J.D. Vance does. Maybe he tries to keep him in line a little bit, but he has nothing to lose. He can come in. He can just, you know, plow right through and really do anything that he wants. And I would say in his mind, he probably feels this way because
he's going to golf a lot. He's going to do a lot of golf.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about in his first, during the, you know, the first Trump administration, how many people he fired, how many people were in and out of his, you know, cabinet and everything. I think it's probably going to be similar. Hopefully some of the important people, like we've talked about, you know, RFK and Elon, those people stick around and those relationships hold. But I don't think Trump cares that much. I mean, ideally, they will be.
I've got a feeling he has more experience now, though. So, so hopefully he puts people that he works better with in place early on. And they're also appointing people that are good teams. I mean, if you think about it, you don't need to make many high level appointees that are bad before you are really causing a problem for yourself.
Right.
Because they are all going to hire people that are bad, you know, and then it just kind of systematically falls apart. So I'm really hoping that is a part of his strategy that he's learned from, that he knows, you know, how to do better.
Yeah. But I guess if you were to go back and say, like, did he, because, you know, there's the whole drain the swamp, like, thing in his first campaign, like, did he do that? Do people think that maybe he accomplished draining the swamp, or is now the time where he's going to really do it, make some really bold moves and actually feel like he did what hit on his agenda in the White House? And I think
he's coming in with the same energy, the same wants.
Yeah.
He couldn't get, like, there were a lot of safeguards in place to kind of stop and hinder anything that he was trying to do the first time he was in. I mean, they were basically impeaching him from the second he got in there.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be so much harder. Look, they tried to cancel Donald Trump, And when I say they, it's like the government that was in, you know, arrested, basically put him in jail. That was their plan. Now he's the president. So felonies and charges and anything, just goodbye. And now he's in charge again for 4 years and he's not running. I mean, holy shit. Imagine that. And now he's going to go, yeah, we're going to clean out. I mean, he brought in that border guy, the guy that's going to run the border down there. I forget his name, but he is a serious dude. I mean,
I didn't catch that.
He's 100% like, yeah, we're kicking him out. They're all gone. Day one. I mean.
Okay, so what's your opinion? Do you think that that's going to affect the cost of labor in our country? Do you think that that's going to have a negative effect to, like, you know, take away a lot of the immigrants who do perform laborious jobs? Like, is that going to affect us to do it all overnight? Like, they're hoping?
I mean, it would have to, right? Which does beg a bit of the question, like, ultimately, is that good or bad for the economy? I mean, there's good and bad on every side of any argument. It's like, if it's potentially kicking, you know, elite, like, terrorists and criminals out of this country, that's probably a good move. That's pretty good.
Well, yeah.
But if it's also just tearing a lot of people out that would be working hard and working a lot in this country, you know, that's kind of a difficult one. I mean, I have friends that own construction companies, and they have a lot of illegal Hispanic people that work for them, and people from South America that work really hard, do a great job, always show up to work, always do what they're going to say that they're going to do. And you know, this is how these people run their business. And, you know, those employees get to take a chunk of that money back home with them and really help out. It's like kind of just an unwritten rule, is like, that's the American way.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I mean, the American dream, you know, I mean, like I said, you're an immigrant and you've immigrated to this country, you know, and you've been through that process. It's not an easy process.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the American dream is like almost like it almost doesn't exist anymore because things cost so much. And because now we have this like sort of attack on immigration, where the real problem is not immigrants, it's criminals that are immigrating, right? It's people that are fleeing their country because they're being either persecuted or because they're breaking laws or just because they're running or for whatever reason they think they can have a more successful crime life here in America. Then, like, you know, that's the issue that we're facing. But between the potential tariffs increasing the cost of goods and the potential cost increases of labor, I mean, there's going to be plenty of industries that completely crash if something else isn't like fixed within it, right?
Right.
So like these things can't happen overnight. And I feel like a lot of Trump's like promises are immediately, I'm going to make this happen. And people are really expecting that.
But also maybe that does work. Maybe there's some plan that we don't know, right? This is a big part of it. It's like, you can speculate all you want. We also can't stop him. So let's just watch what happens and adjust accordingly, right? I don't really know, though, how you turn around this like mass illegal immigration that we just had. You probably do have to be pretty strict about it. And if it's as big as they say, we're not going to be able to kick them all out overnight regardless.
Right, yeah.
So there still will be plenty of people to work and, you know, have that kind of cheaper labor, I would imagine. You know, it's like set the rules in motion day one, but everyone knows when it comes to government, it takes time.
Right.
You know, it just really does take time. One thing I wanted to get to is the RFK stuff. So many mixed feelings on this. You know, it seems like many on the left that were always RFK guys, or a big chunk of them, have just completely lost it with him because, you know, he went with Trump. And, you know, they all lean on his anti-vaxxing type energy, right? Which is really just questioning forced and mandated medications into children and others. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's going to step up, hopefully, and start to work with Trump and other people in the administration for health factors. Oh, oh, oh,
O'Reilly. You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. And really ones that minimize obesity, because if you can minimize that metric, you know, above all others, you're reducing disease and chronic illness across the board,
yeah,
right, for their whole life. And that's a fantastic thing to do. And then Dave brings up kind of shocking stats, 77% of boys, which is what, like high school age, high school, college? Are not fit for military service due to issues like poor health, mental health, substance abuse. You know, obesity is a big part of the poor health. That's crazy. 77%? What does that mean? 77% of these boys can't do like regular fitness stuff, like go for a jog and do push-ups?
Yeah, the way that they put it was 77% have some combination of these things. So some of them have multiple, you know, sometimes it's, you know, like even if you have asthma or if you have like, I don't know, like there's like chronic fatigue stuff now. There's like all these crazy things that like people kind of, or like maybe even ADHD could be one of these that technically is like a diagnosis. It's a mental health diagnosis that doesn't make you fit for like all military service. And because we're not in a draft or whatever, they're not taking anyone that's not like peak performance level. Like they don't need that many people. But it's such a sign of what's happening in the times, right? Like the lack of regulations we have on food, the lack of support we have for mental health, this younger generation, this Gen Z, this, you know, even the whatever the next one is that's coming up, like we're going to continue to see these trends until something drastic happens. You know, in addition to that, we know the toll that technology and social media takes on mental health, and the spread of information and the, you know, like kind of glamorization of being ill or having problems, you know, like promoting being like vulnerable and all of these things, if that makes sense. So people sort of like lean into like, oh, I'm depressed, or oh, I have anxiety, or I have this and I self-medicate and I have all these things, or I self-diagnose. And you go to sign up for the military and you fill out a form and you're like, yeah, I have this, and they're like, you don't qualify. So I think that the statistic is a little bit more drastic than probably the reality of it, but that being said, like it is really odd and important that we turn this around and that we address it.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in high school in the 90s, they were like taking a lot of people into the military. It was like a lot of people from my high school that probably weren't going to get jobs in many other places or were joining the military.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock on the military at all. These people actually, you know, in a lot of ways turned out great because they got great skills from that experience that they wouldn't have got, you know, working more menial jobs around the city that I went to high school in. So, but still, you know, not pretty. And we got to get these younger kids healthy again. We got to get them out playing and understanding nutrition. And this shit shouldn't be getting worse. Kids shouldn't be understanding nutrition worse than they did 20, 30 years ago. It's like, that seems like an awful trick.
Well, not with the amount, like I said, the amount of information that they have access to. It's not like they have to walk to the library and get a book and like read about how to have a healthy diet. It's like they just, it's like can just be part of their algorithm.
There should be like an app on your phone and you scan like a crumble cookie and it says you will be obese if you eat this and well, you'll die.
Those things do exist. I mean, there are apps, but most of them are not funded by the government and they are all done privately. So it's like you can just sort of pick someone. You're like, I align with Bobby, whatever his name is, or right, he has an right. app, Bobby says. And, you know, so you pick these people and you sort of say, this is the type of health I align with, and I'm gonna like filter my food and my choices based on this. And it's all across the board. You know, there's all the way from being a vegan, plant-based, you know, all of that, all the way to like keto and like, you know, supplements and whatever. So there's no one government regulated platform that says like, this is what we endorse, this is how, and here's what we subsidize to make it happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like we've talked about that before, the subsidization of the products that are on food stamps, basically, for a huge portion of our country, especially the low income individuals in our country. Soda, number one purchase.
Juices.
Juices, soda, processed cereals, you know, literally no protein available when you on some of these programs.
But you live like, on carbs.
You literally live on carbs, sugar, some canned things like beans.
You don't need muscles. Just keep moving with your limited muscles.
And it's like, why are we not like, why is there not like a protein pat shake for people that are busy and, you know, don't know how to cook? It's like, that's the easiest way to get, you know, a really important, you know, regardless, like those things are, need to be overhauled. And, that's something I'm very excited about and hopeful for, having Trump having won and RFK aligning with him.
Yeah. I think they're going to do it, you know, and here's a big thing for like mainstream media, right? It's, and Dave was saying this, I mean, he had some strong words for CNN and MSNBC, but what they're not going to get this time around that they got in spades when Trump was first in is huge ratings.
Yeah,
I mean, CNN's ratings dropped so massively after Trump lost that last election. And, you know, the CNN people loved that in the sense of like they wanted him to lose. They didn't want to lose all their ratings, but people stopped paying attention to them. And after the Russiagate bullshit and a lot of their kind of COVID news, they've lost so much confidence with people that they're not going to be tuning into CNN to get all the new goss on Trump.
Yeah.
There's other outlets now. People will be going to X, which, by the way, Twitter, X, you know, Elon's company, is becoming very quickly like the most trusted news source. I mean, it just happened, I think today there was an article I read that like Italy's number one news source, trusted news source right now is X. Multiple countries are doing this and it's happening in the US as well, which I think is wild. But it's just because it's that open forum. They have community notes, you know, there's like an oversight that's from everybody. What better way to get it than these random memes that like pop up on Instagram and say, this guy said this and he sucks. And then something about Diddy parties. And you're like, I can't verify any of this shit.
Yeah. Joe like was like, Elon needs to buy CNN. and they're like, why would he? Well, because we need them. We need him to do it. We need him to fix it. He's the only one that can do it.
Don't buy that piece of shit. Just make your own news source.
Yeah, which CNN he kind of did. Is but
garbage.
You know, broadcast television, there's still an audience for it, an older audience. I think that's also been an issue with, like, you know, the boomer generation or the generation, so the Gen Y, you know, they trust like those television sources. Like they find one that they watch and they're like, oh, this is the truth and there's no other potential truth out there. And that's something that, you know, when he said that, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, that does make sense. Maybe if Elon did buy it and was like, this is a completely non-biased, like unfiltered TV source, some of these people who maybe aren't getting their information from social media might start to, and start to see that like things really have shifted within the parties, within the nation, within like the beliefs of the people, and they won't feel so like polarized and attacked through the next election cycle.
Right.
Like we're through it. we can all take a deep breath and kind of have some relief for a little bit, but we'll get back to it in 2 years. The talk will start again, and it'll be a whole new pool of candidates, and it'd be really nice to see like a better way to access information about the party, about the policies, about, you know, what's happening in the world.
For sure, with less mess and bullshit. And I mean, you know, and this is why people like Dave Smith are so important, because they help you get there.
Yeah.
You know, when we're in the loss of social media, he is somebody that steps up and really articulately analyzes and explains topics that are being so misconstrued by these different sides. And I really do respect his opinion on things. I'm so glad he gets to be on Rogan so often. And yeah, I'm not surprised that in the middle of the night on election night, you know, I think 2-3 in the morning, it was Dave who Rogan spoke to. Like, he's just that trusted when it comes to this type of information. And even his breakdown of what happened to the left and why they've lost people's trust and why they probably lost this election, I think it was valuable. You know, it's like people on the left could hear it and think that's just a criticism and ignore it and it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that's the sort of feedback you would want from a coach, a business coach that was helping you with your LLC.
Mm-hmm.
If you sit there and listen, it's like well put together. He's not just trying to say things to make you sad.
Right.
It's a good breakdown of like these things went wrong. And if you address them, you know, you wouldn't have done that bad. Anyway, check out that conversation. I really liked it. It came at a great time, right after the election, right after Joe talking to Trump, and also talking with Elon. Really, really good. We're going to finish up here with Tim Dillon. You know, Tim's political commentary is a little lighter, I would say, than Dave's, but just as valuable. I mean, he's a national treasure after all. You know, they get into it. I mean, obviously, Tim's being pretty silly about a lot of it, but it has great points throughout. I mean, they discuss Elon Musk's contracts and potentially taking those away, government contracts, putting more restrictions on Twitter, all these things happening, just like Elon was saying, you know, and really putting a lot of weight on this election. And you know, here's the thing. You could say, oh, it's just a lot of weight for Elon. Well, yeah, kind of true. But also, like, slowing down us getting to Mars, which kind of is, like, symbolic of the human species progressively achieving, right? It's like there's something beautiful about, like, landing on the moon. It's a big thing. And then any sort of closure of Twitter is the type of censorship that America just doesn't stand for. It's just not what America is, I don't think. You know, you can make all the excuses you want. Oh, it has hate, it has this, it has that. It's kind of the news for the world. I don't think that's a place that government should be restricting. It just seems like a slippery slope.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You said it all. I mean, I think you start censoring one place and it makes it appropriate to do so in another. And I think we can kind of work it the other way, like we were just talking about, you know, if more and more sort of open, you know, non-censored platforms become available, then I think they'll continue to come.
What did you think about when they were searching a Google for where can I vote for Trump? And the top results were where can I vote for Harris and other articles criticizing Trump? Now, I get that Google is its own company and it can display information however it wants to. And if it has its own bias about what it likes and doesn't like, it can say. I mean, Google's going to be more pro-America than pro-Russia.
Yeah.
Does that mean that the people in Russia trying to use Google are going to be pissed off with the results? Yeah, of course. However, since it is such a used tool for most people, and like when someone is trying to find some information, you know, and they say, are Republicans, like, hey, where can I vote? that one is like,
yeah,
it seems ugly.
Yeah, it feels invasive. It seems ugly. The kind of bias in that we're seeing in these search algorithms is surely unsettling. Like, it makes you wonder how much influence these tech giants like Google have on like a general public opinion and the types of things that they're, when they're searching the kind of information they're receiving. What I know about Google search, Google ads, Google SEO, all of that, and just from my education of that topic and that platform, with the right amount of money and the right technical like backing within your webpage or your search or your information that's online, you can redirect almost anyone who's trying to search something. If you can predict what someone is going to search, you can redirect them to your site. So I don't see this as like a huge conspiracy. I see it as they put a lot of money into redirecting people. So for example, there was a time where we were trying to go to Home Depot and we searched Home Depot. We put it into Google Maps and it literally drove us. We selected it and it literally drove us to Harbor Freight. And it's like that was paid Google Ads. That was the power of Google Ads, basically.
Right.
So I don't see this as like this major conspiracy. It's obviously unsettling. I wish that it wasn't allowed. I think there should be some regulation around it, like especially when it comes to something as sensitive as an election or voting or your right to vote, your right to information about, you know, something like this, like voting for the person who's going to run your country. Like, you know, when it comes to like...
Oh, so you're saying it's like possibly more of an accident just based on...
I mean, it was very intentional from the Harris campaign. What I'm saying happened. It was extremely intentional, and they put a lot of money behind it. The Trump campaign could have done the exact opposite. They could have said, or the exact same thing, but flipped it. They could have said, if someone typed in, "Where do I vote for Kamala Harris?" If they had put that into their keywords and then redirected to their site, the Google search, and paid enough money and put an ad in and paid more than Kamala Harris's campaign did, it would have come up, "Here's where you vote for Donald Trump."
Oh, I guess the issue is like it's known that Google was a big contributor to the Harris campaign.
Yeah, and there's absolutely potential
So there's like some issue there, right?
There's absolutely potential.
But here's the thing. Listen, ChatGPT just came out with a different type of search function. It's starting to work a lot more like Google. I don't know. I can't speak for anybody else out there, but I've been using chat a lot, you know, over the last year and a half. I've liked it. I love playing with it. Now that it has that feature on there, I almost don't use Google at all. And I don't know how long it's going to take for chat or other search AIs to basically replace what Google is. I mean, Google was the only game in town for a while.
Yeah.
And once these stories start coming out about how they give you information around your election, people aren't going to need that much more of a nudge. I mean, if you're annoyed with a company, you will take a slightly shittier service for a while just out of frustration. And that lowers the bar for the competition, for sure. And I really do feel like that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think with Google's place in the tech world, and it basically the term Google it is synonymous with look it up on the internet, I don't know that we can reverse that. That's like telling someone stop calling the thing you wipe your nose with a Kleenex. Like every brand in the world makes their own line of Kleenexes, but you can't just like stop telling people to say Kleenex, right? Like I'm forgetting the technical term for it, but like Google, it's always going to be the go-to. It's always going to be the default for people, even in their minds, right? So, you know, for instance, on iPhones, I open Safari. And so like, I actually get like, I think it's a, but you can choose your search platform. Like you can just choose your homepage. I have mine set to Google because all my accounts are set hooked up to Google, but like you can change it. And so if that's something that bothers you, I would just say start there. Like don't, like you can set your default browser to something besides Google and start there and see if you start to get different results, or literally go side by side and search it and see what actually is different for just like anything random that is important to you or not important to you, but irrelevant.
Right.
And start there. And I mean, obviously awareness and is power and knowledge is power. So telling people, you know, try this, or, you know, encouraging your family members if you feel like Google is being really biased or is like not doing right by you and what you're trying to achieve, you can encourage them or help them to like change their cert, their, you know.
Yeah, knock it off, homepage. Google. I don't know how you're doing it. Just knock it off.
But we're never going to like tell Google how to run Google.
I just did. Okay. You wait till Google listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, gonna, hey, that guy that reviews the Joe Rogan Experience.
You know what you should do?
We're going to change it.
We're going to put this on a disc and we're going to mail it to them.
A floppy.
And listen to this, Google.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you, Google.
And they'll be like, we can't play this. Can't use, what do we need an Amish computer for? Like, what is this?
None of our computers even have a CD player anymore. So,
what about when Tim pointed out that the Harris campaign was running opposing messages on Palestine and Israel, right? And so like basically she was having some pro-Palestine ads running. And then in other areas, probably the Jewish people, like pro-Israel, like we support you, we support what you went through. Like that kind of is wild.
It's peculiar. I mean, yeah. I've never
and
heard.
And listen, you can sit there, be listening to this conversation, and be like, oh, I'm sure Trump did similar things in similar areas. And I'm like, okay, fine. Look, yeah, possibly. Also, we're only talking about this that got caught by CNN. CNN caught this and called her out on it. I mean, how bad do you have to be in your own left-wing party when left-wing CNN calls you out on it? Because that's the problem. The Israeli-Palestinian thing kind of divides the left in a way. They don't even know how to handle it.
Right.
It's not like they can just be like blaming one side on Republicans.
Yeah, I would say this is one of those topics where, just like with the, you know, with the immigration, the mass amounts of immigration into swing states, like I want a rebuttal from her or from them. I want them to say, this is what happened, or this is where the miscommunication is. I want some kind of explanation. I don't doubt that there is one. I don't doubt that there are, well, someone put this out, or we used AI to put together our fucking campaign and it got confused, you know, as it does. I don't know, or there's just too many people involved and the message got mistaken. I don't know, but like someone needs to own up to it. Someone needs to clarify. Someone needs to come out and say, no, this is what we actually stand for, and denounce one of those topics. I mean, those, you know, preferences, because they're different. They're very, very, very different. You know, that's just like saying, you know, I support, you know, abortion, but I'm also, you know, pro-life. Like, you can't be both, unfortunately, in terms of like voting, right? You either vote for it or you don't.
Yeah.
And this was sort of one of those things where where it reminded me of a discussion we had prior about voting based on topic and policy rather than candidate, right? Mm. The candidates are a pawn. The candidates are a face. They're there to put on the show, essentially. There has to be someone in office, but like I truly feel like they should be an anonymous person, and whoever they just say, this is the, like, find two people that have, or a group of people that have a number of, you know, varying levels of support for different policies, you know, combinations of support, and whoever we vote on as a country, that whoever represents us, like, represents what we vote for in terms of the policy, right? Yeah. So we vote on the policy rather than the party. And
but you need a leader, though.
Well, you need a face, because it gets people riled up.
Yeah.
But this is part of what I see as the problem, is people get behind an individual or they dislike an individual. For example, Trump, for things that his mannerisms, the way that he talks, his sort of, like, you know, like sometimes, like, I even have a hard time listening to him.
The amount of pussies that he potentially grabs?
Yes. All of the things.
I mean, that's going to rile people up.
But
I get it.
They fully are committed as the politician or as the person to like uphold the policies that they stand for, that they say they're going to, and we vote them in based on these are the policies that we want enacted, then like, what are we going to do? I mean, it's like a blind date basically, or like a, you know, those dating shows where you talk to they people before you. Yeah. Then they move the wall and you're like, ooh, okay, this is who I got. I'm going to go with it. Right. Or you don't, but like, I don't know, that's just, it kind of keeps coming back to that.
There's something to it, you know, that potentially, I mean, it definitely does remove some of the emotion from it. And, you know, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't matter. You could have a candidate that literally has every same value that you do based on this chart that you fill out. And then they're an absolute dope. And well, you sure. put them up against Putin or the Middle East, and it's a total disaster. Like, yeah. you gotta have like real leadership out there too, and you know, that's where it gets tricky. But look, Tim's conversation is always good. He's like the most comical version of real talking points in the news as you can get. This is why he's so important. He's ridiculous. He'll say outrageous shit. He gets away with it, which he always should, and he also is like really well informed about what is going on, how wacky things are, and he just puts an incredible spin on it. I love it. Yeah. I love the guy. He's so funny. And yeah, good week of pods for Rogan. Good couple of weeks. I mean, he's on fire right now.
Yeah. I'll say the Tim Dillon, you know, final notes is that this was like the most refreshing during this whole time of the election leading up to the election. This has been the most refreshing podcast to listen to, the easiest to get through. And I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief.
Ugh, I would say. All right. Thanks, guys, as always. And gals, we will speak to you next week.
Cheers, y'all.
There are bigger problems to outthink, opportunity, transportation. Greater challenges to outdo.
Wait, our ESG commitment, build or retrofit.
When we never settle for the world that's been built,
AI make my real estate choices.
That's when we drive it forward.
Breaking ground on our new headquarters.
Welcome to the tour.
Towards better outcomes and better futures for our clients and our communities. At Cushman & Wakefield, better never settles.